World Financial Group.
Justice and Drew here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. A little bit later on in the hour, we will get into how the Minneapolis Council is proposing tightening social media rules. Leap forward. Proposal tighten social media rules at Minneapolis City Hall. Critics say it doesn't go far enough to keep officials from blocking the public. And what they're looking at is proposing the mayor and council members begin using city-approved social media accounts that prohibit them from blocking constituents. What fun would that be? We'll get into that a little bit later on in the hour. Right now, we're very pleased to welcome to the show president of the Institute for Liberty, host of the LangerCast. Powered by Randy's Electric, Andrew Langer. Good morning, sir. How are you doing this morning?
I am recovering from an insane 4th of July weekend, John.
Was it good? Was it good insane, or was it bad insane?
Well, okay. Good insane, saw the fireworks up in New York, which were just incredible. Bad insane. Let me quickly tell the story.
Sure.
Because It gets into a lot of things you and I have talked about. So, had a very strange random occurrence. Went and saw the musical Hadestown with my family on Friday night.
Okay.
Which was spectacular. This is a musical that won best musical at the Tonys. Well deserved, even with the political angle. You can't do a musical in 2019 without having a political angle. Anyway.
You can't do anything in 2019 without having a political angle.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if, it's Trump's America, for crying out loud.
That's exactly it. So the thing is, we're sitting in the front row of the balcony. We have two seats next to my wife. We got the tickets for my wife. And there are two empty seats next to her. And these two women walk up, and they come down the aisle and get ready to get in the seats. And I look, and oh, my God, one of the women, I mean, this is totally random, John, is my ex-best friend from high school who has become a rabid never Trumper.
Okay.
One of these people who just really over the edge, activist kind of take to the streets, engage in street theater kind of person, who eventually, finally blocked me during the whole Brett Kavanaugh hearings. And I sit there and I'm like, I don't want her to recognize me because she is the kind of person who will absolutely make a scene. And so I kind of turn away to talk to my daughter. She doesn't see me. And then I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I hear my wife start to engage and talk to this person. And I'm having this very surreal situation where my wife is carrying on the most pleasant and innocuous conversation with this person who, if she saw me, would literally start yelling and screaming and shouting at me. It was a very odd evening, to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine. It is so interesting to just dissect every news story from the angle of how would this, I mean, we've moved beyond sort of the difference. It's still there. The difference between how Republicans are looked at and held accountable versus the difference between Democrats and how they're looked at and held accountable. And then you have that other level of anything involving Trump and how tainted it is. It doesn't matter. We're going to get into it, to a bit of this, to the point where if Trump's involved in something, even something that is universal, or not universally, that is celebrated from sea to shining sea, the 4th of July and America, even that ends up getting put in a negative light simply because Trump is president. Anti-Trump turns into anti-patriotism. And that's not to say that we haven't seen that before in the past. I certainly remember times, and I thought that it was ludicrous to think of this, but I remember times when Obama was in office where there was talk about how triggering the American flag could be for some people. I think Katie Couric was one of them as well. So it's not necessarily anything new, but Trump has provided the ability to shine the light on that particular issue that now because Trump's in the White House and he wants to be patriotic, now we can't be patriotic because Trump is being patriotic.
Well, I mean, it is a situation where everybody then has to say, well, this is how I'm being patriotic, hippie dippies that I know up in the Hudson Valley of New York. Oh, this is how we celebrate the 4th. And, three guys hanging around a fire pit, long hair, haven't showered, et cetera.
There's an article here from Daily Wire. When Dems lose elections, they lose pride in America. And they highlight this New York Times video op-ed. It was called something like Stop Telling Me America is Great, according to the article here from Klavan. And I've watched it. It was very clever. It puts forward the idea that this whole concept of America being great is ridiculous. And he goes on to say, after 8 years of listening to Obama apologize for this country, after 8 years of listening to news people who said that they were uncomfortable when they would see somebody wearing an American flag pin, you know, it's no surprise that with President Donald Trump in office, we're going to lean on patriotism. The question that I have for you, Andrew Langer, is how much of all this talk and all this chatter and all this controversy matters? How much does this affect elections in the end? Is this just news media, social network chatter that doesn't really go beyond that and doesn't really affect people when it comes to going to the polls to go and vote? Or do you think that this stuff seeps in and absolutely does have an impact?
Well, okay. I mean, let's sort of get even deeper here, John.
Sure.
Because what it does is it affects us in the way that if we don't have any kind of common thread running through us, right? If we no longer all have baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet, then there is no hope of coming together to solve the big problems. And in fact, it drives the republic to destruction. And that's not idle talk. That's not me being pessimistic. You know, that is me looking at things like Slate's anti-Declaration of Independence piece on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
you know, to which Noah Rothman quipped on Twitter, "When you are so woke that you think King George III was right." Right? If we go back and we're just sort of trashing the very essence of who we are as a people, then this is how you lose a nation, you know? And it's emblematic because we haven't had a conversation about the two dozen idiots who were up on stages in Miami over those two nights. You know, it gets us to the point where this is where this gets into your question, John, I'll answer it. When you have essentially two dozen Democrats, all of the candidates, all of the candidates running for president of the United States, all of whom agreeing that we need to decriminalize border crossings,
mm-hmm.
right, illegal border crossings, at the same time incentivizing illegal border crossings by providing free health care and free education to people who come here illegally, that is the Democrats' candidate. And if Americans are so despondent and driven to distrust Donald Trump that they feel like they have no choice and they must vote for President Democrat, and then we get both houses of Congress being Democratic, they're going to enact these things. I mean, this is the one thing where I think we are now past a situation. Donald Trump has demonstrated that when you are a president, you can make political promises and actually work to deliver on them. I have no doubt in my mind that Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, because I think the nominee is going to be one of them, are going to work overtime to make sure that America continues to be transformed in the way that Barack Obama, remember, Barack Obama is now too far right wing for the Democrats who are running for president. That's gone now.
Well, and here, okay, boy. We could spend the whole rest of the show going down this road.
I know it's a lot there.
No, but it's a lot of good there because here's the thing. I have, and maybe this is my naivete, okay? I have a hard time believing that that the majority of Democrat voters want what those candidates are saying up on stage. I
agree with you.
Okay. So if that is the case, right? Will there be the individuals in Congress, even if the Democrats take control of both houses, will there still be enough Democrats in control of Congress that do agree with whoever the individual sitting in the White House is, who also is a Democrat, to go and enact those things? You track where I'm going here?
No, I do. But here's the problem, right? I mean, yes, if we go down the legislative route, it becomes much, much more difficult, right? Then we're in the how do you implement the Brexit, yes or no? How do you implement the let's repeal Obamacare? But the other side of it is that Democrats, and again, this has nothing to do with Donald Trump doing this, because Democrats have done it and have promised to do it. The issue then comes in is how much of this gets implemented via executive order, and how willing are the Democrats in Congress to push back on that, which is to say, I would say not at all. No, John, then this is, let's be really clear here about this. The American people, what the American people want is an almost entirely separate question for how they are driven to vote in the binary choice presidential elections, right? If the media is able to make Donald Trump so toxic that candidate Democrat is able to get 50% plus one in enough electoral college states to put them over the edge in the electoral college, it doesn't matter what the specifics were. You know, you get what you get, what you get. So that's the real concern here. And let me say this with the caveat being, you know, that after those Democrat debates, Donald Trump's poll numbers, according to this latest ABC News poll, are higher than ever.
Right. Well, and that raises the other question too. And I want to get back to where we are, but let's go here since sure. You brought that up. You know, right now you have a movement to upend the system, right? The electoral process that brought us a President Donald Trump. Okay. If Hillary got elected, you wouldn't be talking about the Electoral College and wanting to get rid of it, or the states changing their own individual rules to try to get, enough involved to go and change how the electoral process worked. If Hillary were elected, you wouldn't even be talking about that. So, but right now we do have a circumstance where they are trying to upend that just because Trump won. That is also the same process that brought about a President Barack Obama, who didn't, and correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't cast himself nearly as extreme as the candidates that are running now. The question I have is, can, in the Democrats pushing identity politics and so many of these candidates being candidates of identity, can a candidate like that even win right now under this process? I mean, is the only way that a candidate like one of the candidates they're putting forward who's running on identity politics, is the only way for them to win if they were to go and upend the electoral process at some point in time?
Well, no, that's exactly right, and you're setting up the exact scenario. What happens in the first Wednesday in November when Kamala Harris loses the election? That's what we're going to be talking about here. Is folks getting beside themselves about this, right? Because this is a scenario. Joe Biden is the center of a leftist Democratic Party, right? Jim, I talked to Jim Garrity from the National Review a couple of weeks ago, and that's what he said. Joe Biden is at the center of whatever Democratic Party he happens to be in. Now that the Democratic Party's moved to the left, he is in that center, but it's still further left. My apologies for that in the background.
No worries.
Then you have a situation in which, I apologize, guys. Then you have a situation, but Joe Biden cannot win a Democratic Party, a Democratic primary, with this kind of a situation.
Right.
Which is why you found that, Joe Biden trashing his fellow Democrats on Thursday and Friday as being too extreme.
That's why, and when we back this up, I have a hard time believing that I believe that the candidates that are up on stage believe in what they're touting and what they want to do. Don't misunderstand. But one, I have a hard time believing that, again, the majority of Democrats who would go and vote are going to want any of them or the issues they're running on. To me, the reason why they're out there pushing all this nonsense and so extreme is that you can make a direct connection to, Trump wants to do this on the border, so we're going to do the complete opposite. It's this idea that it doesn't matter what Trump does. Anything that he touches or proposes is immediately a negative to the anti-Trumper, and that's everything that those Democrat candidates are running on, which brings us back to that question again. But is that a winning strategy for the for them, given the fact that most of the country probably doesn't want a lot of those things that those Democrats are proposing either?
Well, listen, this gets into this dichotomy between the Democratic primary voter and the general voter, which is why Joe Biden is making this really risky play to try to make the case for moderate Democrats who usually don't vote in primaries, and independents and possibly never Trump or Republicans to cross party lines and vote in open primaries or primary situations where you can pick your ballots, right? Like here in Virginia. That's a very risky strategy because you usually can't motivate those folks to come out. Because Joe Biden knows that in the end, he represents the best chance because right now he is the most moderate candidate with the most name ID who can get the machine going to do something about it. The problem is, and here's what's going to happen. If I'm Kamala Harris, I'm a former prosecutor from California,
Andrew Langer,
and I'm really making a prosecutorial argument.
Andrew.
Kamala Harris turns around and asks Joe Biden, would you be willing to negotiate to get legislation passed with Republicans, right? This is Joe Biden wins the general election. He becomes the great compromiser. He becomes the guy who does this. And he answers the question, right? Either Joe Biden answers the question, no, I'm not going to negotiate. I'm not going to compromise, in which he turns off all of those independents who right. want that, who want somebody who's going to negotiate and compromise. Or he's going to say yes in order to try to get those folks. And Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, et cetera, immediately pounce on him and say, Joe Biden has a history of negotiating with racists and Nazis. Joe Biden promises to negotiate with racists and Nazis. You cannot vote for Joe Biden. And then Joe Biden is done because he can't get the Democratic base voters to come out and vote for him. And that is the risk and B, the great Achilles heel in Joe Biden's strategy.
Let's continue this conversation coming up. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. We'll take your thoughts more with Andrew Langer. Plus, we'll also ask Andrew Langer about this. Representative Ilhan Omar says national marijuana legalization needed for equality in our laws. She says the congresswoman says a nationwide law would mean economic fairness. We'll ask Andrew Langer whether or not that is
5FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. So Drew will be back on Thursday. He's still on vacation in North Carolina. Andrew Langer joins us for an extended segment. So I wonder, Andrew, if I can make you feel as bad as I just made Sam feel by reminding her that today is my birthday. I wonder if that's... Because apparently she... She forgot.
I feel awful.
No, you don't have to feel awful at all.
I didn't even bring it. I ordered him a gift because we were talking about his birthday last week, and then I forgot to wish him a happy birthday.
When you get as old as I am right now, you don't really count him as much anymore. I think Andrew Langer can probably agree with me on that one.
Yes, without a doubt. I am no longer doing. You know, listen, I... My birthdays can be so anticlimactic. Who really cares anymore?
Right? Yeah, they really are. They really are. They're such a big deal when you're younger, you know. But when you get older, it's just like, you know, I don't even like my dad's came and went. And Melinda's like, you call your dad? I'm like, no. I go, why? She's like, because he specifically said he does not want to address his. Doesn't want his birthdays addressed anymore.
It's nice that you respected that.
You know, it's funny because for me, you know, my dad's birthday and my mom's birthday too. It's when both of my brothers, you know, I guarantee they're going to be in town, and so it's always a good time when the four of us are together.
If anybody is looking to get me anything for my birthday, don't just go and purchase a copy of my science fiction novel, Embark. That's all you need to go do.
There you go.
Then you just go to Amazon.com. Yes. It's $2.99 for the ebook, $11.99 for the paperback.
By me is good, great sci-fi fantasy fiction.
Thank you very much. Hey, all right. So let's back up here, talking about the 2020 elections and the candidates, the identity politics, how extreme they are, the effect it's going to have on those that end up going to vote. Let me throw a big huge wrench that'll probably derail a lot of this as we move on to some other issues. But here's the problem, like with our conversation, and I think with most of the conversation surrounding this discussion of the 2020 election, and especially the large slate of Democrat candidates and what they're running on. Trump has complete, in my opinion, and I would like to know your thoughts. Trump has changed the dynamic so much that it is almost impossible now to really dissect and work through what's actually happening and what is going to happen, because Trump is in the White House. It just seems like there is such a free for all. And I keep using this example, but it fits so well. The Matrix example. We are so outside the Matrix right now. Everything is so exposed that it's almost impossible to go decipher it, dissect it, and come to any sort of cogent conclusion.
Well, and let me add to that, which is the greater problem in all of this. Now, I don't know if you've been watching any of this new HBO series, Years by Years. Jan and I, my wife and I, watched the first episode last night. And they raise a really interesting issue, which is, I don't even think they know that they're doing it, which is the role that social media and connectivity have had in changing the discourse, sort of this immediate reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And you add into the scenario you raise, John, which is, it's not just that we don't know how to dissect Trump, is that you've got more than half of the folks who do the dissection who are still beholden to the old ways of thinking. And so everything they predict regarding Donald Trump is wrong. Either what he's doing or what he has done, their spin about it is wrong. So it leaves folks very confused, right? So in the show Years by Years, I'm not going to get into it. You know, Donald Trump is president and there is an action that is done, which the mainstream media thinks that Donald Trump is this bellicose guy who's going to try to start wars with everybody. He's leading us to the brink of war with North Korea. He's leading us to the brink of war with China. He's leading us to the brink of war with Iran. And yet, here's what we know. It's part of the reason why Donald Trump is up in that ABC News poll, is that when push came to shove, you know, almost 2 weeks ago now, Donald Trump said, yeah, I'm not going to listen to my neocon national security folks and go bomb Iran. We're going to try to find another way to skin this cat. And so you have a huge percentage of Americans who are all kinds of spun up that Donald Trump is essentially like George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush and, frankly, Bill Clinton, and is a warmonger who's going to get us in these endless wars and get, you know, American lives killed, blah, 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 when the reality is a much different thing.
Before we let you go, we've got about 2 minutes left here. Let me just throw this at you briefly. We talked about this a bit online, and I liked your take on it because you answered a question for me. But in an interview with BET, the freshman Minnesota Democrat, Ilhan Omar, I think she's grasping to put some kind of positive spin on her current seat that she holds. But she told lawmakers, she said lawmakers should not allow for the states to pick and choose whether to legalize marijuana. She says what happens without full legalization is you have a state where someone is publicly and professionally able to profit, and the next state someone could be sent to life in prison for it. We want to make sure there is equality in our laws, and I don't think it is just for that kind of economy to exist within this policy. The question that I have, though, is even if we were to nationalize marijuana, make it legal at the federal level, can't the states still go and decide whether or not they want to legalize? Can individual states still decide how they want to criminalize or legalize marijuana?
Well, sure. I mean, this gets into what we talk about. And the Supreme Court was talking about this at the end of the term, the issues of what they call the dormant clause, the dormant commerce clause theory, which is if the federal government has the power to regulate interstate commerce, it means that the states themselves do not have the power to regulate interstate commerce. It sort of goes both ways. The real issue is how the law would be written. And I'll say this much, because I didn't get into this with you online, John. The issue here is not about equity between the states, because any state, you know, can do it now. And the problem is that Ilhan Omar, you know, is thinking, well, if the federal government waves its magic wand, the states will all do this. It underscores that she really doesn't understand the problems with federal law here, which is to say that we need to change. If you're a state that wants these industries, then the federal law needs to change in things like banking and finance, where you can actually open up a bank account if you are a marijuana entrepreneur, which you cannot do right now, which is a huge, huge problem. She really doesn't understand the issue, and this is really just about her social justice pandering as opposed to real serious policy.
You can pretty much say that about everything that Ilhan Omar proposes. She really just doesn't understand the issue. I don't think she understands what her job, what her job is. But be that as it may, we are out of time. Andrew Langer, as always, man, thank you so much for the time this morning and the extended time too, man. I really do appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Happy fourth, guys.
Hey, thanks. Coming up, City of Minneapolis wants to rein in online behavior of elected officials. The Minneapolis communications staff plan to introduce a new social media policy publicly later this month. We will give you details on that. Also, we'll talk a bit about President Donald Trump and his 4th of July celebration, asking Americans to stay true to our cause. And further down this conversation of, you know, if Trump is involved in something, it's bad. Why were people actually protesting
FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. 1 hour from now, Minnesota's Mr. Right, Jason Lewis, will be joining us, as he does every Monday. Got a couple of things we want to run by Jason this morning. One of them, Pat Condon out of the Star Tribune. Republicans count on Representative Tom Emmer to reclaim House majority. The job of the NRCC chairman has thrust the Republican into the brawling heart of national politics. And the focus comes down to some comments made by other individuals, harsh commentary, putting it lightly, against Democrat challengers for some Republicans and whether or not this is the right tactic to be using. It cracks me up how, you know, leave it to the Star Tribune and the left to write up an article talking about criticizing of another political party and whether or not they are being appropriate. The hypocrisy is dripping off of even the pages that I printed.
oozing.
I know. It's
off
so,
the pages.
And this gets into the story we're going to talk about here in just a moment, too. Also, there's a out of Conservative Review, Minnesota Nice Culture is now a sanctuary for transnational gangs and drugs. Yeah, we don't have enough time with Jason Lewis, obviously, this morning to get into all that. Anyway, 1 hour from now, we'll talk with Jason Lewis. I do want to get into, in a few minutes here, Trump and his 4th of July celebration. There's a great piece here as well from Kyle Smith. I believe it's out of Daily Wire. I'll have to double check that. But why this 4th of July, why patriotism is worth defending. And it's a really good piece in response to a lot of the controversies that were swirling around the 4th of July, for crying out loud. And it's just because Trump's in office. I mean, so much of this is just because Trump is in office. And as we were talking about with Andrew Langer, the most of the platforms and what the Democrats that are running for the nomination next year, what they're proposing is strictly just a counter to what Trump is a part of. And again, we'll get into more of this more of this coming up. Let's go here. This is also out of the Star Tribune. City of Minneapolis wants to rein in online behavior of elected officials. Okay, they're proposing the mayor and council members begin using city approved social media accounts that prohibit them from blocking constituents. I'll explain why they don't have to do this in just a moment, because they don't. The Minneapolis communication staffs plan to introduce this new social media policy later this month. In a draft overview, it shows the communications office would assert more control over social media in City Hall, including setting best practices for how elected officials use the sites like Twitter and Facebook and maintaining access to their accounts. The policy would also regulate social media for thousands of city staff, interns, or consultants, even personal accounts. Now, that's interesting because we've had similar discussions, but just sort of talk around about that within what we do as well. Nobody's ever gone so far to go and try to regulate, like iHeart. I've been working at any company, including iHeart, that's ever tried to go and regulate the use of our social media account.
Right.
And there's a really easy answer for that, and the answer is also the same answer of why they don't have to do this. Because it's to our detriment if we act irresponsibly with even our social media accounts because of the job that we perform.
Right.
These elected officials don't need to have any kind of policy in place if they just went and respected their gigs.
Mm-hmm. It's personal accountability.
And they don't have any.
Yeah.
And if they want to go, look, and here's the thing, their constituents and those that support them allow them to go and behave this way. If you're going to do this, if you're going to introduce this plan, well, okay, are you putting restrictions on them when they speak in public at all?
Yeah, you can't walk around with like a sensor button.
Right.
When they're out speaking
How
to people.
How great would that be, though?
Right.
There was a great... have you watched Black Mirror?
A few episodes. Yep.
There was a Black Mirror episode where technology... It's because it's all about social networking and phones. Black Mirror, right? Being your... It's Black mm-hmm. Mirror is the... It's the, when your phones... When it's your Black Mirror. Those that didn't realize that.
I actually did not realize that.
Oh, did you not
even.
Know that
no.
either?
No.
Black Mirror, it's your phone.
Oh.
Right. It's a black, you can see yourself in it, but yes. it's a black.
That is
mirror.
Kind of deep.
Mind blown.
Mind blown. I have watched Black Mirror, not a whole lot, but I've watched a good amount of episodes, and I never made that correlation.
Well, do not feel bad. You are not the only one.
Yeah.
People in my household also did not make that correlation.
I was today years old when I found out what Black Mirror means.
Couldn't that correlation either. But one of the episodes, the technology... If I'm remembering this correctly, the technology of social networking had advanced to the point where it was embedded within us, right? Oh, so you had the ability when it comes to social networking of you were actually tapped in a physical way to your social networking, to the point where if you wanted to block somebody out. You could do that.
Like block them?
So you
just didn't see them?
Right. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that we were living in the future world where this was available, and I were upset at you for not remembering my birthday.
I didn't forget it. I mean, this morning I did.
And I'm not upset at you, but let's just say, for the sake, I would just be a petty, petty man if I was. But if I did, I was like, oh, I just, and I could block you, and all I would see would be this washed out white noise outline of you, and I couldn't hear anything that you were saying.
Weird.
So in the episode, one of the ways that people would be punished would be they would be blocked. So you could
basically
not
have, you'd be banned.
You could not have any interaction with anybody around you. And they did this for people like pedophiles and all that, where they blocked that you could block them out from view. So anyways, back up here. The policy regulating social media account for city staff, interns, consultants, even personal accounts, it would fall. Those who fall under the broad definition of city employee could no longer use personal social media pages for city business communications or to circumvent city processes such as releasing data. The mayor and council members as elected officials might still be able to avoid the new rules because the draft policy does not cover personal social media accounts, even ones still used for politics. Council member Alondra Cano asserted that her Twitter account was personal after she blocked several reporters last year after a story about her absences from public meetings. The city's proposal comes at a time when politicians depend on social media to communicate. The platforms have raised fresh ethical and legal questions. Last week, a city manager in Edina apologized after tweeting that young North Loopers will eventually flee to the suburbs to raise families rather than sending their kids to Minneapolis public schools. Minneapolis' existing 8-year-old policy offers little guidance for navigating the modern chaotic state of social media. You don't need any of this. This is completely unnecessary, right? I mean, social media is just that. It's social media. It's an extension and an ability for you to go and express yourself. And if there are elected officials that want to go and put out nonsense, then they should be able to go and put out nonsense. And those constituents and those that read it can go and determine for themselves whether or not they want to go and vote for those individuals for the sake of argument in the next election. I can't help but look at this and go, everything is tainted by them. I mean, how much of this is really because of this and how much of this is because of Trump and his use of social media? And I'm making a big leap. We're talking about the Minneapolis City Council here. Unless there are legal ramifications, and a lot of times that comes into play, right? Sort of if there's legal angles to this where they don't want to, you know, they're worried about legal challenges to things that people would tweet or put out on social media. But I am completely against proposing any sort of stipulation on that. If you are elected to a position of power, you should be automatically just be treating that job with a level of respect, and also using your social networking platforms exactly the same way.
Yeah.
If we're at a point now where we need to go and start regulating those that get elected in their social media accounts, and they can only use ones that are given by the city of Minneapolis, then maybe we need to start rethinking, you know, about the individuals that we actually go and elect to office.
I think that the way that someone handles themselves on social media tells you a lot about them, and a lot about their character, and a lot about their judgment, and, you know, just how much thought they put into how they present themselves and the things that they're doing and everything. I think that just the way that someone conducts themselves on a social media platform, you can learn a lot about them. And if they're going to kind of like, you know, filter that, regulate that, I mean, those are like things that I'd like to know. If someone has the poor judgment to post every little personal detail on a public platform, I'd like to know, because that's probably not someone I would want to vote for, because that just shows poor judgment. You know what I mean? Like, if they're just one of those people that post their every thought and complaint and desire, that's annoying.
Several council members agreed the updated policy is needed. Council member Lisa Bender said, in the past, elected officials use the same accounts for campaigns and official business, and the new policy will allow more clear communication to constituents. One council member, Andrew Johnson, also welcomed the new policy, but questioned how it would be applied if official accounts transfer when a new council member is elected. Would quotes or statements by one council member possibly be falsely attributed to the next council member? No, man, just leave it up to the individual. If a person gets elected and they want to open up an official Twitter account, then let them go and just open up an official Twitter account. We don't need to go and mandate this at the government level that they can only use these particular accounts. Let's go and talk with a friend of the show, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Rob Dorr. Good to talk to you on a Monday morning, Rob Dorr. How are we doing this morning?
Hey, doing great. Wanted to chime in on this.
Yes, sir.
There's another interesting angle that happens with this because of Minnesota laws and the freedom of information. Minnesota, it's called Data Practices Act. It's something we do a lot of at the Gun Owners Caucus. Any communications that an elected official or even an appointed official or a government employee sends on behalf of, within their official duties, we are entitled to that information, the public. So I think what the city of Minneapolis is trying to do here is make it so that those requests only have to focus on the accounts that are officially associated with those individuals, because otherwise we legally can go and say, hey, we want all of Alondra Canoe's direct messages on Twitter that relate to her official capacity, and she'd be required to turn those over.
So with that being said, where do you stand on this particular, the potential of this policy being implemented? Do you think it's a good thing?
I do, just because we do a lot of Data Practices Act requests to kind of find information, find out what elected officials are talking to, you know, what gun control organizations and things like that. And a lot of times we don't feel like we're getting everything that we're supposed to get. So if this streamlines that process, I think it's good from an open government standpoint, where they can say, okay, hey, this is your official account. Give us the passwords so that we can go and get all this information and fulfill that request. We know that there's been times when people have been using their personal email accounts, and we were fairly certain, just from looking at the context of the conversations, that we're not actually getting all of the emails we're supposed to get, and we have no real way to prove that.
So if they were to have official accounts, would you still have the ability to go and petition for information on their regular personal accounts, or would the idea be that they would only be using those official accounts and they could not be allowed to use their personal accounts anymore?
Well, it sounds like the expectation of the policy is that anything they do within their official capacity should be done on the official accounts. And we can still petition. When we write the request, we say we want all communications, all tweets, all emails within conducted in their official capacity related to X topics. You know, we'll say, you know, gun control or, you know, buyback program or whatever information we're seeking at that particular time. And if this helps streamline that so that we get the information that we're entitled to as members of the public, I'm all for that. Now, it's up to the integrity of the individual as to whether or not they're actually going to surrender their personal accounts. But I think this gives the city a little bit more oversight, and through that gives the public a little bit more access to that information from what's conducted in their official capacity.
Boy, you kick open the door, though. Let's say for the sake of argument, I'm an elected official, right? And it's not going to happen, but let's just say for the sake of argument, I am. Something as benign as me tweeting about, like, the NASCAR race. I mean, somebody could imply, you know, maybe not here in Minnesota, but somebody could imply that was motivated because I was trying to appeal to a certain constituent. So I don't know. I got a lot of questions, you know, surrounding it from that angle of, you know, what constitutes something that's politically motivated on social media and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's a different political angle, you know, tied into all of this. I'm looking at it from the lens of us as members of the public being able to know and see what our elected officials are doing in their official capacity. That political angle of assigning motivations and things like that, that's a whole nother can of worms.
You probably will not be surprised to find out that according to the article, at least from what I can see, there is no... here we go. All right, let me get into a little bit more of this coming up, because there is one paragraph that actually does zero in, I believe, on what exactly you were referring to. As always, Rob, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate the insight and the added information.
Thanks, appreciate it.
651-989-5855. We'll talk about this a little bit more. Minneapolis Council proposes a proposal to tighten social media accounts for elected officials. And again, this would regulate social media accounts for city staff, interns, and consultants, even personal accounts. We'll get into more of this and your phone calls. Those on hold, don't go anywhere. You're listening to